Well, were you living alone between when the earthquake happened in 1933?
Well, I sure was.
Okay.
In fact, I had been going to City College, and I had developed pneumonia. And I weighed 107 pounds, and I was in the Seaside Hospital for 32 days. And I really had pneumonia, and they didn't have penicillin. And they gave me creosote and water. And the day I got out was the day of the earthquake. And I was home when the earthquake happened. And our house collapsed, part of it. And there were 3 people killed on our block.
That's when
you
were living on
20th and 20th, yes, uh-huh. There was a man and a lady and a little boy that were killed from bricks falling on from one of the old garages down the street. And my sis dragged me outside of the house, and I laid out there all that night and the next day, and then they took me to San Bernardino for the night. And then I came back, and I said I was very weak. So my uncle took me down to Palo Verde. And I stayed at Palo Verde for about 3 weeks until I gained my strength back, and then I came back.
You mean
back
down to New Mexico?
Well, it was in South off the Colorado River.
Uh-huh.
It's in around it, I mean, California.
Uh-huh.
And while I was there, I got the wise idea that I'd go into the fish business, because all of these tuberculosis people were down there catching fish, and they had big live boxes, and they had bass and catfish. So I came back and contacted with several of the fish dealers out of Pedro, and they all agreed to buy my catfish and everything. And then I went down and I contacted about 40 of these people up and down the sloughs, and they all agreed to sell me fish there. So I had to have a partner, so I sent a telephone call to my buddy in San Antonio, and he jumped on a bus and came out. And just the day before he got here, the state legislature passed a bill because some character had been dynamiting the sloughs down there. They passed a law that there'd be no commercial fishing or catching the fish on that area, so that was one dream down the drain. Mm-hmm. But I did have a lot of them sold that I didn't have. I think I was selling for 16 cents a pound, buying them for 3.
Oh, that's remarkable, good business. was there damage down to the store in the park?
Oh, yeah.
The bathhouse
was right back of us, and some of the gingerbread work around on the bathhouse collapsed, and we had some damage to the popcorn stand. But I wasn't really at the selling in the popcorn stand because I was laid up with this pneumonia setup. But right after that, I was back down there. And then I had a chance to go to work for Walt Disney Cartoon. And 4 days before I was to report to work for Walt Disney, which at that time was in a garage and had 12 people working for him.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother died, and my dad and my aunt, who was running the popcorn stand, said, "George, you're going to work in the store while we get all the funeral arrangements." Well, Disney had a very strict policy. If you didn't appear when you were supposed to, you were out, regardless. Well, I didn't appear, and I was out. But several of the fellows that was in that class that I was would have gone into, one was a co-originator of, I think it was Donald Buck, not Donald Buck, Cato and Cardell.
Mm.
But I heard later that he retired when he was 34 as a practical millionaire.
Well, have you studied art in school?
I was pretty good at cartooning, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And draftsman, you know. I'd say drafting things in futuristic designs that I'd made that was in state exhibits and all. But I couldn't draw flowers now.
Oh, you probably still could
do it. It's an act. You have to keep up. You can't just just have them tried for a long time.
Well, we were talking about St. Luke's. Were you members of St. Luke's?
Yes. I remember there was a man and a lady that came by and picked us when we lived at 20th and Lewis, picked us up in an old Model T Ford, and took us down to, I think it was 5th and Brendan had kept them locusts at a church. And I went there for about 3 years, two or three years, and then the church left or something. I can't remember just exactly now. And then all around, I started going on 7th and Atlantic Avenue. And I went there for quite a few years. My sister and I used to catch a bus and go down. And then when Redeem and I married, we were married in St. Athanasius Episcopal Church in L.A. Mm. And then we made our deal after we came from Balboa there, back into St. Luke's down there. And Paul Austin was there, and then several others, and then Mr. Dallas, and throughout down the line of all of them until the present time, which have been fantastic people.
Well, then, since you had pneumonia and everything, you probably weren't too aware of the destruction of the church.
Only that I had seen it after I got back. I didn't see it actually, you know, and they were cleaning it up pretty much when I got back. But I remember the open dome and the open ceiling and everything.
Yeah. So we're just going through some of the stuff now for mm-hmm. the 50th anniversary mm-hmm. celebration of the earthquake. Mm-hmm. And going through some of the old pictures and everything like that. That's what I've been looking at down mm-hmm. at the lakes. And Harry Austin was quite a man.
Yes, he was.
Did you ever listen to the St. Luke's radio broadcast that he did? He did them on KFOX.
Once in a while, but not too often because I was working most of the time on Sundays down at the store.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when Mr. Dallas was the same, and he was left here, he would come down to the pike, and lots of times Sunday afternoon after service, and to get away from the room, he'd stand there and we'd talk for a half hour or so, and he'd see the other half of the world go by.
Yeah, well, we moved here 20 years ago, and the pipe wasn't, certainly what it had been before that. So, I mean, I think the Navy is still here, but when you read about the pipe in the early days, everybody went to the pipe.
It was a family recreational area, and they used to send out to get how many PD red cars from LA down, and they'd come in from all directions. And people would swarm down there, and then at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, they'd all start back to the PDs to get back home again. And that carried on for a long time. And then when the war came along, and the Navy and the Army and the Marine Corps and everything was there, it reverted more or less from a family unit into a serviceman's recreational area. Then it got to be pretty rough a little later, and then it cleared up, and we had the family units back again. And it gradually deteriorated because the management would not spend any money to fix it up. That's my opinion. They would let it dry, and
that's the Long Beach Amusement.
Long Beach Amusement Company, yeah. And it was primarily a group of professional men who, in my estimation, had no experience in running the amusement park, and they were in it for the money, which they got out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as I said, it finally deteriorated to the point that people just didn't want to come down.
Who were some of the other people that were working down there in the stores, the attractions that they had? What were some of the others?
Well, they had Lee's restaurant was right next to our candy store. And our candy store was built where the runway from the old plunge out into the water. There was Lee's restaurant on one side and Miller's ice cream custard shop. And then in between was the runway built where people would go from the plunge out to the ocean. Well, then a little later we built our stand there in 1937. We built a stand there, a candy store there. But Lee's restaurant was there, Hoops and White ran that for years and years. And there was the old Adam Linky Dutch Ranch back in the corner of the bathhouse. And Copy's Tamale place was on the corner. And then the old bowling alley and pool hall was back, and then they had the boiler rooms for the salt water that heated the water for the plunge. It was back in a little area by itself. And there was, like I say, Hoyt's Theater, which carried a legitimate water bill for years.
And was it popular, the vaudeville shows in those days, do you remember?
Oh, 15 cents. Popcorn and candy bars, a lot of popcorn with a nickel, and candy bars was two for 12 cents, I think, something like that. But it was a very interesting time of my life, I mean, because things were so different. I can remember making a crystal set and listening to San Francisco, and when I was going to Hamilton Junior High School, a little friend of mine with the name of Billy Westinghouse, and one summer his dad came to my folks and asked if I could go back to, I think it was Chicago, Illinois, I'm not sure which town, but and learn radio. And my folks said, no, we can't go that far away from home. And that was the original Westinghouse radio outfit.
Oh, so it came from Long Beach.
Yeah, I don't know whether he lived here very long, but he was at one time here in Long Beach. Whether he was a relative of the Westinghouse or what, I don't know, but I know that. Well, the kid went back, I remember he went back, but I never did see him again because they wouldn't have stayed there or not, but. Lots of opportunities that passed me by, but I'm not worried about it. I've had a full life on it. Don't regret any of it.
Good.
Don't know whether I'd be any different.
Yeah. Well, you're a man of many interests.
Well, a lot of.
Well, you see, Long Beach changed a lot, too.
Oh, yeah.
Sound change?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand the mall down there now. I think it's 20 years too late myself. But I understand it's doing pretty good.
Do you remember in the early 50s there was a movement to try to move the Civic Center out from downtown and move it out toward off of Wardlow?
Yeah, but I don't think anyone ever came out. I remember there was quite a bit of interest on it, and then it just died out.
Yeah. Well, it used to be that people would shop. They would go to downtown Long Beach, you know, you'd go down all the shops and stuff around Pine Avenue, and I talked to women who would have their music lessons downtown and all of that sort of thing. Did your family do that? Did you do your shopping down there?
Well, then that was the only place to go.
Uh-huh.
And then when the malls started in, the reason the malls started in my opinion, is because the landowners down there charged these people so much rent. They finally just said the heck with it, they're going to move out. And they moved in the outlying areas. Well, when the different malls began to open up, while the downtown areas began to deteriorate.
Mm-hmm.
Because people wouldn't, why should they come down there and get a ticket for parking for 15 minutes overtime when they could go out into a mall and have free parking and do all their shopping? And that was what I thought was they should have done at the park 20, 25 years ago, and not the park at the downtown area 20, 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't, and then it got, I think, started to vote, but it may be that up until a better deal, I don't know.
I think the parking has always been a problem downtown.
Very much so. When I'm in San Francisco, they had these big buildings where you parked and you'd be 8 to 10 stories high, you just round and round and round.
Mm-hmm.
And that took care of all of the parking, off street parking.
Well, supposedly then you're retired. When did you sell the business?
I didn't sell. We were forced out. They decided on, I think it was 79, in May, that they were going to close the park, and they gave us all notice to be vacate in 30 days.
Oh, so you were leasing your car?
Yeah.
From
the well, after we built the buildings and all, I went and reverted to the amusement company. Which I had $55,000 invested in two stores and buildings and materials and all.
Did you get anything?
Not a dime. That was one of the biggest disappointments because I had figured that eventually I would either franchise or lease or,
sure.
And then get some income. But then when they gave us a notice, we were out.
Well, you know,
So we did stay. We took it to an attorney, and we did stay till after Labor Day, but it dropped after there. We didn't make anything of that. It was just a lot of time spent with nothing coming in. There was nobody coming down. We knew the park was doomed, and we got to have, we had begun to get a lot of the undesirables. And I had one of my storerooms, somebody set fire to it and destroyed quite a bit of my equipment. But there was people breaking in the doors and sleeping in different places and all. So I was glad when we did close us up, because it was getting to the point that, and it ceased to be fun to go to work.
I talked to someone about the first official redevelopment thing in Long Beach, in that area that they call Ocean Gate, but this is the commonly called it the jungle, that redevelopment area of Magnolia, the south of Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was adjacent to the park, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. It was city-owned property. And there's still some of the places down there. There's a loose town going in where the merry-go-round was. Incidentally, when I was on the fire department, that's when the merry-go-round caught fire. And we were there for quite a while trying to put that out, because there were a lot of varnishes and oils and things that was on fire. And it was destroyed about a third of the park area that spread.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite an interesting fire. Got burned up quite a bit on that fire, but had a hold of the end of the hose when we charged the line, and the line was open, and it threw me around like a rag doll until some of the guys got a hold up and held it down, because I couldn't bear let go of it, because it had killed half a dozen people standing in there.
Well, that
area then
was
that was developed. There were
a lot of old apartment buildings and things like that. I guess that's where people lived, and they were
earlier
on in Long Beach, you know, and it was probably kind of nice, because
it was right by
the river.
It was a very nice little place down there. It had a lot of little bungalows, little California bungalows, and people from Arizona, primarily Arizona, the ranchers would come in for the summer.
Oh.
And lots of their crops were in, they'd come in for the summer, and then they'd go back. A lot of orange, growers of oranges had their partridge in various places, avocados, which spend their summers down here. The Old Virginia Hotel down there, that was one of the high spots of the world at that time. I mean, I can remember going to a few of the high school dances in there, and then some of the banquets we had, with beautiful woodwork and huge big rooms with chandeliers and all. Nothing like that's ever happened since, I mean.
Yeah.
They don't build them like that anymore.
Well, that just sort of deteriorated, didn't it? That wasn't damaged in the
rest. No, they tore that down with the dark buildings and all that in there.
Yeah. Well, then, now, how long have you lived out in Los Ritos on Dix Street?
Since 47.
And did you build that house?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any special reason you chose that area?
Well, we talked it over the DNA. We thought it was one that would not depreciate too much. And as I say, we looked around, and there was places, and we thought that would be the best spot, so we bought on the corner, and just 7 months after I bought it, I was offered 5 times the price I paid for it, so I figured it was a pretty good investment. And I know when we bought the house, Kenneth Lynn designed it.
Wow.
And it was supposed to be a showplace at that time, but not a showplace anymore. But we bought the money from the bank, and Mr. Young, who is the financial advisor at the Bank of America, was the one that instigated my loan.
Gordon Young.
Gordon Young, yeah. So it worked out pretty good all the way around. My connections with St. Luke's, we're happy with it.
Well, that's not
going to
depreciate, not the way real estate is. Well, that was an area that was one of the last areas to be developed in town, I think. Well, maybe not the last, but I've talked to people who say that the Los Ritos was so far out in the early 20s.
Oh, yeah.
So far out, it was country.
Well, yes, because I used to ride bicycle from where I lived on 20th and Lewis with a couple of kids, and we'd go out to where the Las Vegas school was, and back in there was a slough where the trestles crossed the Colorado River, and hunt ducks in there.
Mm-hmm.
And down in the back of the country club was more sloughs, and we'd camp in there with Boy Scouts and all, and then Bill J. Reed had a Boy Scout deal, and then when we'd go from there, I mean, before that, we'd go out to what they call the Tall Timbers. It's off 7th Street and Park Avenue, I believe it is now, but the golf course developed later, but we had the green there, and we had these eucalyptus trees in there, and we'd build our stockades, and we'd have our camp meetings and everything in there, and then up all went down the drain, and the golf course came in.
There was quite a few stables over there.
I think there's only two or three left off of the Wardlow. But my kids, when they were growing up, would 50 cents, a grub and ride for 50 cents an hour, and they got to be pretty good, so they were sometimes for a dollar, they could ride all day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything about the early
Gordy
Field airfield?
Yes, I saw Earl Gordy's plane crash.
Oh, really?
The old hangar, I don't know what ever happened to it, but it was there at the corner. And
what? I was asking you when our power went out about Earl Gordy and his
flying
field.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I used to go down and watch them when they would bring their planes in there and put the little hangar there in kind of Yellow and Grandage Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And then Earl Gordy had a apartment house down on the ocean front that my folks and I lived in when we were when I was a little kid. And I was out at the airfield. I had left the airfield on my way home because we had a fellow that was called the Boy Scoutmaster by the name of Mr. I think it was Alan J. Woods. And he was connected with the services somewhere with the Army Air Force or what. But he had a airplane out there. We would go out and wipe it off and clean it up, and then he'd take us up for a ride. And I had been up that day with him, and I was leaving, coming home, and I heard this high whine. And I turned around, just as I turned around, I saw the plane hit the ground, which I was about a mile and a half from it. And then I found out later, there was Earl Gordy and another fellow in the plane.
Were they hurt?
They were smashed all to pieces, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And as I say, I didn't naturally go over there, because I had something I had to get home to do, but I found out later it was Earl Gordy. But that hangar stayed there for quite a while, and then I saw, I don't know whether it happened or they took it for a heritage thing or whether it was just destroyed. But
mm-hmm.
There was an international motel in that area now.
Oh, yes, I know that.
Yeah, and then they used to have that pumpkin center around Halloween. Now they have pumpkins there, but that was where the hangar was.
Well, you're supposed to be retired, but you seem to be very busy being retired. You told me that you're a member of Ducks Unlimited. You want to tell me something about that?
Yeah, I have. The last 2 years I've been chairman of the Ducks Unlimited, and our particular chapter, which Long Beach has a chapter, so we can't call ourselves Long Beach Ducks Unlimited chapter, so we are Lakewood. But we have our clubhouse over on Santa Fe, and it started, the Ducks Unlimited from my club started their dinners and all about 34 years ago. And the price of the dinner at that time was, I think, $5. And they raised maybe $400 or $500 for Ducks Unlimited. Well, that money would go back up into Canada, and they would take them and flood areas and so they could propagate the ducks. Well, as the years went by, I took it over 2 years ago with the aid of Jim Carley, and we went to $10 for our meal. And from $1,000 to $2,000 to $3,000, I think it was $3,500 was the most that the club ever turned in to Ducks Unlimited. My first year, we sent $11,000 into the Ducks Unlimited. And the next year, which was last year, we put in over $15,000, and we were the third highest in the state for the amount of money received to the amount of money, the percentage that went to the Ducks Unlimited, which was 87%. So we had a windfall. We had a fellow that donated this 300 chickens, and we had our dinner. Now this year we're going to have Cornish hens and ducks and geese, and we're charging $15 for the dinner, which is still the lowest in the state, because we went anywhere from $25 to $50 to $100 a dinner. But we still came in more money per capita and per amount of money received than any, or as I said, we were the third highest in the state.
So do you still hunt?
Oh, I sure do. I just was down to Mexico last week.
Oh, that's what you went to.
Well, the season ended the day before yesterday down in Mexico, so now we wait till Jacksonville. Everything is closed down there now. Now it's fishing, starting very soon it's fishing, and then duck season, dove season, and so on starts in the fall.
Yeah. So, during the
men of
Ducks Unlimited, do you go with other people to certain places as an organization?
The 19th of this last month, we had the what we call a critter feed down at El Noir, which is about 55, 60 miles below the border. And all of the fellows that hunt down in there and belong to the Sportsman's Club bring in the various game that they have accumulated during the year. And we had a huge big barbecue and dinner for about 80, 90 people. And we had everything from soup to nuts. We had dove and quail and pheasants and frog and ducks and geese and everything, and all the salads and everything that went with it. And it was barbecued and baked and fried and everything, which took a whole day to prepare it. All the women got in and prepared it while the rest of the guys hunted.
So the wives do come along then?
Yeah. Normally on the hunting days they don't go down, but it's when we have a special event. Now, in another month or so, we're going to have a fishing tournament down there.
Do you go to places where you sit behind duck blinds and that kind of stuff?
Yeah,
Is that the only way you hunt ducks?
Well, you have to hide naturally, because the duck is not a dummy. They're not going to come into when you're standing, you know, where out. So you have to camouflage yourself there and put decoys out. I belong to a gun club here out at Lake Paris. It's called Mystic Lake Gun Club. And we have our permanent blinds or the big cement, round cement pipes that are sunk in the ground and the camouflage covering, and we have our decoys out. And we have a camp for the trailers that we stay in, and have a clubhouse that we cook and have everything in there. And we go out on Tuesday night and eat and hunt Wednesday morning and go out on Friday and hunt on Saturday.
Are you a fisherman,
too? Oh, I love fishing. I'm slated to go fishing 9 times, 10 times this coming albacore season, I hope. And I've talked to Father Young, if I catch fish this year, we're going to have a big fish fry down at the church like we used to have with Mr. Bellis.
Okay.
We had 5 or 6 times we had big fish fries. And we raised actually more money than they do on a pancake dinner for breakfast. And then I've got this the 27th, so we're going to cook pancakes on there.
I was reading some of your stuff about the tuna club, you know, and how that got started over in Catalina, and how it was also a conservation kind of thing, because they were going to, they set regulations about kind of lawn to use and all of that sort of
thing. Well, that was more from conservation, that was more for our records. And then you catch a certain size fish on a certain strength line, naturally, that was a button or an honor or something like that. But I do know that the tuna club and several of the other clubs are very, very strong in conservation, which right now we're all worried about the way the sardines went from overfishing, and now the anchovies, the way the biomass, the fish and game shows that the biomass on anchovies, which is so many millions of this and that, I know I fished for the last 2.5-3 years on sport boats, and there's been many, many times out that we didn't have bait that we couldn't get it.
Oh.
And yet they still can take and knock the anchovy and run him down for Colonel Sanders' chickens.
So when you went sport fishing, did you come back into Long Beach? Did you go out of Long Beach?
I used to go out of Long Beach. I go out of San Diego now.
Oh, okay.